For members only, Golf Smarter number 246, recorded on August 31, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Free game improvement scorecard and more with Rick Kosher.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thank you again for listening to the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's show is part two of the conversation we began last week with the Golf Better coach, Rick Kosher. Now, when I initially approached Rick, I wanted to pursue his concept of your ball's flight plan, which is why I called him back for a second episode, because we didn't get to cover it last week. But this time we spoke for nearly an hour about so many other things that I'm having issues with in my game. The ball flight never happened again. But for me, it didn't matter, and you'll hear why. I thought this was such an interesting conversation that covered so many really valuable topics. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Rick.
Thank you, Fred. Good to be back with you.
And so you had an interesting week. You sent your daughter off to college. You moved her into a dorm, huh?
Yeah, you know, there's a funny story that goes along with that. And, the best laid plans of mice and men, both of my kids became pretty good golfers through high school. My son did play college. So my daughter starts playing golf. She really wasn't interested in it until she was going into the ninth grade. And she came to me in about July and said, "Dad, I really want to play golf this fall." And I said, "That's great, Kara." I said, "What do we got, about 6 weeks?" So anyways, we got too busy on her golf game, and she made the JV team and won all her matches that year.
Wow.
And then she went on sophomore, junior, and senior year to be one of the top two players on their team. And last year when we were going through the college selection process, she really picked up a very, very nice scholarship, about two-thirds of the cost of going to a private college here in Illinois, on a golf scholarship.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. She's going to Marquette University, where there is no women's golf team.
Oh.
So she turned her down the $25,000 a year scholarship to go and follow her heart with the school that she really wanted to go to the most.
Really?
So
what was it about Marquette that was she really wanted to do?
She is very interested in broadcast communications.
Oh, get her a Skype account and a headset.
Exactly.
Just like we're doing.
And she loves the television side of it. It's something that she had a lot of exposure to in high school. Uh-huh. And she goes, "Dad, you know, I really want to do it this way." And I'm like, "Hon, that's great."
Chances are she has a better chance of being a professional broadcaster than she does of being a professional golfer, correct?
Yeah, but you see, here's the real problem, Fred. Mm-hmm. I wanted to become a professional caddy.
All right. And since I'm paying for school, damn it.
Well, my son, we're moving him. He's an attorney. We're moving him to Washington, D.C. in a week or so. And my daughter is a freshman where they only have a men's team.
So you can carry his briefcase?
Well, you know what? I'm going to carry his golf bag up the stairs and put him in the trailer, and that's probably the end of my caddying career. So we can spend more time with you this way.
Yeah. How did she check out Syracuse University for broadcasting?
She did not. She didn't want to be that far away.
Oh, okay. Marquette's in the Midwest, right?
Marquette's in the Midwest. It's right up in Wisconsin, so it's only about an hour and a half or so away.
Yeah.
So she had one criteria. She wanted to be in a metropolitan area, and we could not drive through cornfields to get there.
Mm.
So Marquette worked.
Yeah, because Syracuse is like Sportscaster U.
Is it really?
Oh my goodness, they have a phenomenal program on sportscasting, and they have put out a lot of people into the industry.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I did a thing with play-by-play stuff for years.
Great.
And I wasn't a play-by-play announcer. I just let everyone else do that. That's another story. But we also San Francisco. San Francisco State has a great broadcasting program, which is what I went through and got into the industry from there.
Great.
We have great alumni. But let's talk about golf. Enough about our kids. Let's talk about us.
Exactly. Sure.
I wanted to bring up, we kind of finished with and promoted your golf improvement scorecard. that you talked about. Thank you so much for putting the Golf Smarter logo on that. And we want to make sure that everybody is aware that you can go for free to thegolfbettercoach.com. Actually, it's www.thegolfbettercoach.com. And download Rick's free golf improvement scorecard. It's a little spreadsheet that you've put together that you can print, go over to your local FedEx Kinko's, have them put on cardstock, carry it in your pocket. And I took it out on the course yesterday.
Oh, great.
And the first thing that was an issue for me, and I want to love this thing, so let's work on it.
Absolutely.
The first thing was I needed to wear my glasses to be able to see this. And I don't generally wear my glasses on the golf course.
Making little marks. You and I, too, have that issue.
Yes, that aging issue. But here's what happened. On the second hole, after the second hole, I went, okay, I'm done with this. This is too much going on because here's what happened.
Sure.
I hit my drive. It went left. That's okay. So then I go over on DA, right, drive accuracy, and I hit my driver. So I put a check by the driver. Then by drive accuracy, I put left. Then my second shot went into a bunker. Not a problem. Okay. So what do I do there? I hit a pitching wedge. It ended up in the bunker. Or no, it was my 9-iron.
Okay. So you checked 9-iron.
Right. Check 9-iron.
Okay. And now the next box you could have checked was greens and regulation.
Okay, but I didn't have a green in regulation. But
right.
Okay.
So what I would do there is I would put the direction that it ended up, an S/L, if you hit it short and left of the green.
And I put that in green in regulation, or where do I put that?
Mm-hmm. You can put that in green in regulation.
Okay.
Okay.
But it ended in the bunker. So do I put B.L?
No. You can develop your own coding system for sure.
Okay.
That's not a bad idea. What you're going to find though is on your up and down.
The UD.
Okay. You would have used a club. So let's say you used your sand wedge. Okay.
Right.
So it wouldn't have been a chip. It wouldn't have been a pitch. It would have been a S for sand.
Yes.
And the club was sand, so you could put S/S.
Okay, so or you have a check mark for a sand wedge. So that would have been my third shot. But here's what happened: I got out of the bunker, but ended up in the rough on the lip of the bunker, just short of the green.
Ah.
So now it's like there's too much to ride here.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
These things are great if you're hitting birdie par bogey all the time. But what happens on those holes that you go double? Right. I mean, I had one hole yesterday where I had literally came up to the front of the green. The pin was in the back. It was a undulated green with the pin tucked away over a mound in the back left corner. I had a 100-foot putt. I counted it out because you wanted to know the first putt distance. I had a 100-foot putt I'm on in regulation. Mm-hmm. My putt goes past the pin and off the green.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to hit back up onto the green, although I could use my putter. It still doesn't count officially as a putt.
Correct.
But I go back, I made it up, and I came up within inches of the hole, and I tap it in for a bogey, but I was on a green in regulation and still had two putts.
And still had, right.
Okay, that's my life on the golf course.
But you know what, that's most
these scorecard. This scorecard doesn't help me at all. What am I supposed to do with this thing?
The good news is, Fred, is when you go back home and after you sat down and had your refreshments, that you begin to look back over all 18 holes. And I understand what you're saying because I, too, will have those issues, okay? Mm-hmm. So don't get frustrated just because we can't rewrite the entire round of golf on the card. You're going to remember what you did on hole two when you sit back and analyze.
Unfortunately, I do. There's a couple holes I wish I would remember.
But here's the purpose of the card. Let's talk about that 9-iron you used for your approach shot on the first hole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now if you had used that club two or three or four more times during the round, and it kept coming up short each time, then that's a consistency that we're looking at trying to understand. I'm always underclubbing the 9-iron. Why?
Maybe I think I hit the 9-iron a little farther than I actually do.
Right. Or you could say, yeah, but you know what? I hit my 9-iron. I'm trying to hit it that far, but I can't hit my pitching wedge far enough. But you're coming up short. So let's say I'm coming up short, but I hit my 8-iron too far.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're hitting your 9-iron too short and you're hitting your 8-iron too long, then maybe we have more than a 4-degree difference in the loft angle of that club.
Very interesting. So you're saying that the possibility is maybe I should go to a club fitter and check the lie angle of my clubs.
In that scenario, that's where I would take one of my clients and look at their clubs and say, okay, let's see if there's actually a mechanical reason in your golf clubs that has you feeling that I can't hit my 9-iron because I'm going to hit my 9-iron, but I'm going to be short. But I always hit my 8-iron instead. I go way too long. So we're trying to uncover with the scorecard little bits and pieces of our game to try to figure out where we could fix something now that we may be able to correct permanently. And if it's a lie angle or a loft angle problem, then maybe that's really what's causing our mishits. In this case, too short, too long. In the case of lie angles, let's say that we seem to always consistently miss one of our clubs right, always. Then it could very well be that that lie angle is a little too flat, meaning the toe will have a tendency to make contact with the ground on our swing, causing that face orientation to change and cause our ball flight to go to the right. So again, we're trying to chip away at it little by little, and that's the way you have to improve your golf game, because the game is made up of what'd you shoot? 82?
Oh, I wish. I shot an 86 yesterday.
All right, 86. So it's a good score.
Well, you know, it's interesting about I do want to say one thing about this. I started off with two double bogeys and was thinking to myself, this could be one of those days that I want to forget before I even get started. But I calmed down. I caught my breath. I stayed with it and only had one more double bogey on the day and was shoot and did have a birdie on a par 5.
Okay.
And even got myself out of trouble a number of times. I just couldn't hit my driver yesterday, but there were a number of holes that were under or just around 400 yards, and I decided not to pull out the driver. So I was hitting my 3-wood and hitting it well, and my driver, it was a very windy day. It was at least a club and a half wind, and the driver was just hurting me more than anything. So I just started using my 3-wood and was – you know, I stayed within, you know, the bogey par. So I felt like when I walked away, I was like, that wasn't a bad round.
There you go. And you see, you hit on something that's really, really important. And we all need to remember this when we're out on the course. We're going to have a confidence issue somewhere in the round. And if we can always eliminate those things that are causing us a lack of confidence, meaning you discovered that your driver just wasn't going to work, so you put it away. That's a smart thing to do, because now you feel confident that you're going to be able to put your 3-wood in play, so you rather play that club, even though you may have an iron or two longer of a shot for your approach, but you're starting off again from a position on your second shot that's going to be much more accommodating in trying to make par or birdie. And that's what we're trying to discover with the card over a period of time. I do come home with rounds and I look at the card and I go, what happened here? I've got to rewrite this whole thing. But at least I begin to look back at certain things. Well, let me see what was going on with my driver today. Mm-hmm. And then I can begin to think, why is that happening? Let's talk to the golf better coach and figure it out.
One of the things that I do like about what you've done on the scorecard here is you leave the first, six clubs
blank.
The first slots for the clubs blank, because not everyone carries the same. You know, some guys carry four wedges and one fairway wood. Some carry three fairway woods and two wedges.
Right.
But so you just I was able to put in driver, three wood, three hybrid, four hybrid, 5-6, and then you have 7-8-9 pitch, gap, sand, lob.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So you just put a check mark when you hit that club. That's all you're saying. It doesn't matter what the distance is, right? Just hit it.
I typically will check it off and. And, you know, I'm kind of getting an idea how far I am when I'm going to hit the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I measure out, I'm 150 to the center of the green.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what I'm trying to achieve. And I hit my 7-iron or my 8-iron and it comes up short of the green. So don't get too hung up on exact yardage, but you didn't hit it 150. Correct?
Right.
So put down 135. I just write it in next to the check mark, so that I have an idea when I go back over the card again. Do I have a distance problem with a certain club, and why might that be so?
Right. I think that is the most valuable aspect of what this can do for you. The scorecard is really let you know if you're pulling out the right clubs each time.
Exactly.
And you'll see a consistency, because you don't necessarily see that on your scorecard. Even generally on a normal scorecard, what I'll keep track of is fairways, greens in regulation, number of putts.
Mm-hmm.
And but there's a lot of shots, and my short game is suffering right now, especially like 60 yards in. I'm having a real issue. And
right.
So I'll find that there's no way for me to look back on the scorecard and know where the problem is. So this is going to help a lot.
Let's talk about that short game, 60 yards and in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what is your typical shot that you're trying to hit from 60 yards and in?
I try to avoid it, first of all.
Okay.
because where I think I could hit my lob wedge 50 yards, I'm not. Lots of times I'll scull it, or even 10 yards in freaks me out. Like if I play strategically, especially on a par 5, or even like on these 400 yard par 4s, what I try to do is get myself to a 125 yard shot.
Okay.
Then to me it's, or 110. 110, give me my pitching wedge. 125, give me my 9-iron. I am so confident when I grab my club. I feel great.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm at 40 yards, right, because I'm on a par 5 and I, for some stupid reason, I just wanted to hit my 3-wood on my second shot, and I'm at 40 yards or 30 yards, my knees are shaking when I grab my wedge, because I'm afraid that I'm going to scull it, or that I'm going to top it, or that it's just going to just fly, you know, and not float.
And is that primarily your lob wedge you have that problem with? Or you carry a sand wedge at, say, a 54-degree loft?
I do carry a sand wedge, and I'll use that for a 70 to 85-yard shot.
Okay. All right. Here's a thought for you, and this is something that I work with that we generally start working with golfers who are more accomplished and trying to figure out what type of shots to hit, not what club to use. Okay, but it works for all of us. So let's look at this for a minute. And what I mean by this is the shot we're trying to hit, okay, we're at 45 yards. Now, where is the pin on the green? Let's say we have a totally unobstructed view. There's nothing but grass between us and the pin. Is the best shot there a three-quarter lob wedge or a full lob wedge where you're going to throw it in high and land it soft? Or is the shot a pitching wedge, half a pitching wedge, 60% pitching wedge, 40% pitching wedge, where you're going to fly the ball in a lower trajectory, you're going to land the ball towards the front of the green, if not before the green, and you're going to let it bounce up and go on to the green? So often what I do is I refer to it as club gapping. What I want to know in my golf bag is, when I'm at 50 yards, what three shots will work for me? Well, one I know is my lob wedge at about a 10 o'clock swing, meaning I gauge my position with my top hand on the club, and I'm a right-hander, so that would be my left. So I say I'm going to move my left arm to a 10 o'clock position and hit the ball with that shot. That carries the ball X number of yards. But I might use a sand wedge at a 9 o'clock swing or an 8:30 swing. I'm big on clocks. I can visualize that very easy for me. Some people will think in terms of percentages. I'm going to hit this 60%. I'm going to hit this 30%.
That's because those people are under the age of 30 and they have never seen a clock that has arms on it. They only know digital clocks.
Very good. Exactly. But what I'm getting at here is the lob wedge at a 10 o'clock might be a good shot to hit, but I got to throw it up in the air and it's a little windy. And if I do miss it left, where's my biggest problem? That's a sand trap. I really want to avoid that. So maybe I'm looking at more of a pitch shot with a less lofted club, but a less of a swing and flighting the ball in on a lower trajectory that I think I can control the direction much better. And I feel confident that the contours of the green, et cetera, if I land it in front of the green, it's going to kick up and roll on. And you see a lot of that in today's PGA players because a lot of them, with the groove change, have changed their strategy on how to hit shots onto the green. And that's what the USGA was after. They wanted the game to become a much better shot maker's game. I think they got fooled because I think the PGA pros have demonstrated year to date that the grooves aren't making a difference with their ability to score. They know how to hit those shots, and they've been doing it very well.
I'm sorry, you've just walked into the lion's den for me, okay? Rick, I got to ask you, what's your index?
I played about a 3.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, and congratulations. And then you bring up what the PGA pros are doing. Funny, but most of the time when I play golf and the people that I play golf with, I rarely see people that are single-digit handicap players. Mm-hmm. On the public courses that I go to and on the munis that I play, I don't play country club golf. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, if I'm invited to a local country club here, I'm playing with guys that may be 10s, 11, occasionally a 7 or an 8. Mm-hmm. Okay? Okay, but most of the people that I play with do not have the ability to practice 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. Most of the people do not have the ability to do anything but a swing. Right? I would contend that most golfers cannot do a 60% swing, that cannot grip down on the club and get solid contact that they want to change their stance so that they can change the grip on their club or their position. And for me, I'm okay. I should be speaking for myself, but I watch people when I play golf, not to give instruction, but to learn. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people have that many shots in their bag. I think that they just contending with 14 different clubs is difficult enough, and being able to do different things with each club is why we watch it on TV, to see these amazing feats that professionals can do.
Here's the problem. Yes, we can. Here's the problem. What we see on television is what we try to repeat.
Without practicing.
Well, no. we see full shots on television all the time.
Of course.
And that's what we all go out and try to play. Ben Hogan said that everybody is capable of playing in the 70s if they go about playing the game intelligently. Now, if you would, next time you go play, everywhere where you would use a 9-iron, use a 7.
A 7?
Mm-hmm. And fabricate the shot that you need. You will be surprised when you allow your imagination to get in the way and stop trying to think about making the perfect 9-iron full swing, how well you'll be able to control a 7-iron shot. Yeah, you may choke down 2 or 3 inches on the club. yeah, I may realize that I can't take a full powerful swing. Allow yourself the opportunity to play a different club than you normally would and see how well you do at that.
You know what gets in the way at that point?
What's that?
My head. Then I start thinking about the shot. And the worst thing you can do when you're swinging a club is thinking about it, right?
Actually not, because what you are beginning to do, and Nicholas was famous for saying this. Nicholas was always concerned with visualizing the trajectory of a ball flight. Okay? He visualized the shot, the trajectory, the ball flight, where he wanted it to start. He was always making a movie inside his head that he would replay when he struck the ball. He wasn't thinking about, you know, do I turn my hands over for this? Do I play the ball back further in my stance? Do I swing hard? Do I not swing hard? Do I choke down? What he looks at is he visualizes how he wants the shot to go, and then it makes it happen. I have people that come out who will stand there and tell me that they can't hit a draw to save their life, that everything goes out to right field.
Okay, so we're not using video Skype right now, but my hand is up in the air. Don't even know what it means to hit a draw.
Don't even know what it means to hit a draw.
I mean, I wouldn't know how to hit a draw.
Okay. Well,
pull hook. I'm great at pull hook.
I was doing an outing the other day, and this guy had this problem. I said, what are you doing? He said, look, I'm a terrible golfer. Everything goes high and right. I go, really? I go, have you ever played baseball? He goes, no. Well, I said, okay. I said, let's do this for just a second. I'm going to make a fist, and I'm going to set it in front of you, and let's pretend that's a baseball coming at you. And I said, I want you to hit this ball, pick up your shaft of your club, and hold it like a baseball bat, and show me where you would make contact on that ball in order to hit the ball left. And he goes, well, he picks it up, and he's looking at it, and he goes, well, I guess what I would want to do is I would want to strike the ball on the outside of the ball away from me. I go, yeah, exactly. I said, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to put this ball up. I want you to tee it up, and I said, I want you to take two practice swings for me. This was in the middle of a golf outing. I said, now, I want you just to think about how you need to strike that ball in order to make it go left. So he took a swing, and I saw a totally different movement by him. And I'm thinking, he's got it. I go, take another practice swing. He goes, okay. And he did. And I said, great. I said, go ahead and hit this. His best golf shot of his life, it went left. It started down the left-hand side of the fairway, and it stayed there. And he looked at me, and he goes, you got to be kidding. And I said, no. I said, because what I asked you to do is I asked you to visualize how you were going to do this. And I could see the wheels in your head going, well, I'm not thinking about whipping my hips around or doing this or doing that. He figured it out. He was not a good golfer. But I gave him a challenge, and he was more than capable of doing it when I asked him to think differently about it. Okay, I didn't tell him I wanted him to shut the face 2 degrees and to close his stance 4 degrees, and when he swings through to be sure that he drops down inside it with the right arm and come into it from the inside out, and at the last second flick those hands over in order to change the dynamics of that club to make the ball go. I didn't tell him that. I asked him how he would do it.
Did he try it again?
He said he would on the next tee.
And?
Gone. I have no idea.
Oh. Anybody can do it once. When someone says, here, do this now. It's like, oh, okay. But then do it on your own? Different beast.
Well, it depends which paradigm you're going to start believing in. You know, if you're going to go back to how I've always done it and how I've always thought about this, then you're probably going to end up with the same results. But if you think differently about it, that's why I'm saying, play a 7-iron instead of a 9-iron. Don't worry about, just think and look at that ball and go, okay, so I know that the flight of the ball is going to be lower because I'm using a less lofted club. Okay? I know that I can't swing as fast and as full because I need less club head speed, so I'm going to cut that down. So now I've got a ball that's going to come out lower and shorter. Where can I land that so that the ball will land and chase up onto the green? When I grew up next to a golf course, and the guy who was the club champion of the golf course came up every night after work and played as many holes as he could, okay? And every night that gentleman came up to play golf, and he was the club champion of this private club for years. Mm-hmm. Every night he came up to play, he carried one golf club.
Oh, cool.
He played as many holes as he could get in before the mosquitoes and nighttime drove him off. So he played his 6-iron off the tee on the par 5, played it in his second shot, his third shot, played it all the way onto the green and putted out with it. Okay. So he learned over time by doing this repetitively that I can make certain shots with this club because I can fabricate. I can imagine what it is I wanted to do. And he would play like that. And he turns around and he wins club championships. When he gets his whole set of clubs in his bag, oh my God. The guy was awesome. Hmm. So, you see, we don't allow our imaginations to work. We don't try to play the game of golf. We keep trying to make perfect golf swings all the time.
Mm.
And we think
that's
what pros are doing.
Please repeat that. Please repeat that.
What we don't do is we don't play the game. We try to make perfect golf shots. Because we look at television and we watch these guys and gals – and we think that's what they're doing. They're making perfect golf shots. But when you watch them in person and you look at what is going on around them in terms of where they need to hit a ball to, they're thinking differently. They're not thinking about trying to make the perfect golf shot. I'll give you a for instance. I had a guy come up to the driving range a little while ago. And he comes walking up, and it's like 7 o'clock at night, 6:30 at night. And I go, hey, how you doing? He introduces himself, and he looks at me, and he goes, I said, you come out to practice? He goes, no, I just got done playing. I said, great. I said, let me ask. He goes, I shot a 70, and I want to get better. Can you help me? I said, okay. I said, let's start examining parts of your game. So I asked him to take out a 6-iron. He grabbed it, and he had a very unorthodox grip. And I said, excuse me. I said, can I ask you a question? He goes, I said, have you ever taken a golf lesson? He goes, yeah, too many. I go, what's the first thing they've always told you to do? They've always told me to change my grip. And I said, great. I said, put your 6-iron away and grab your driver for me. He goes, but you haven't seen me hit a shot. I said, I don't need for you to show me how you hit 6-iron. I said, I don't care what kind of grip you have. Unless you can't count, you just came off the golf course and told me you shot a 70. It ain't in your grip. I said, grab your driver for me. Grabs his driver. I said, start the ball off at that post and fade it over that flag. And he did it. And I said, great. I said, now start the ball over the right flag and draw it over the left post. And he did it. And I said, that's great. I said, now we can work on your trajectory and your ball spin rate, and I can figure out how to get maybe another 4 or 5 yards out of that 106-mile-an-hour club head speed of yours. But that's not going to lower your golf score. So we went through the whole game with him, and granted, he's a really good player. But we got down to understanding what the difference was between a full sand wedge and a 45% pitching wedge or a 9 o'clock pitching wedge, because what he needed to understand what his scoring clubs were doing and how to hit different types of shots, not different types of clubs, different types of shots, so that he could land a ball on the green where he had the best opportunity to set himself up for a birdie, because that's what he needs to make.
Right.
I'm not worried about him making less bogeys. I'm trying to figure out how he's going to score. And there are pins on certain greens that you can go after, and there are pins that you have to stay away from. Sometimes you just have to say par is a good score, bogey is a good score, end of conversation. But you get to that point by learning how to hit different types of shots, and we all can do that. Stop trying to make the perfect golf swing. Start playing the game. last year's statistics on the PGA, every statistical category that the PGA tracks, and there's many, Tiger Woods was not even close to being the leader in any of them. Tiger Woods last year led in three categories. Lowest scoring average on par threes, lowest scoring average on par fours, lowest scoring average on par fives. What did that give him? Overall lowest scoring average and the most money. So again, here's a guy that we watch play these incredible shots that he has to make because he's missing fairways or missing greens or not getting close enough to the pin for that 4-foot birdie putt, but he's capable of dropping in the 35-foot birdie putt. He's doing that not just because he's Tiger Woods, but because he's using his imagination to figure out, how do I get myself out of this mess and score? Not which club do I have to make the perfect swing with?
Yeah, but how does that translate to us?
It's the same thing. We need to visualize how we want the game to look for ourselves and go with that making the movie approach.
Do we need the 10,000 hours of play before we can get to that point of understanding?
No. No. But you just told me a minute ago when I suggested to use your 7-iron instead of your 9-iron, oh my God, I got to change my entire game around. That's a good thing. I've got to think differently. That's a good thing. Because you will learn how to play the game that way. And stop trying to make the perfect 9-iron shot. Make sense?
What a wonderful lesson this was.
I want you to test it. I want you to test
it. Just fabulous. We don't play the game. We try to make the perfect shot. I mean, it makes total sense. I wish I had the time to practice more. But if I have an opportunity to go out and swing my clubs, I'm going to go to the golf course and try to get as many holes in as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I understand that. And that is okay. I'm going to be honest with you, Fred, okay? You cannot become a scratch golfer by staying on the driving range. It's impossible. You can have the greatest driving range skills of any human on earth.
Oh, yeah, I am a scratch golfer on the driving range. There's no question.
Right,
about that.
But you step on the golf course and you're letting all those same swing thoughts that you have on the driving range control your game.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, and I always do this with students, listen, I say, look, there's one thing practice does. Practice makes permanent. Whatever you continue to practice, you are ingraining the neurons in your brain to repeat that process time and time again. Now, if you're not schooled and well aware of what you're doing, then you're going to constantly repeat that same move the same way. Okay? Or do we practice like we play? And I'll give you a for instance. My daughter couldn't stand this, but she was one of the best putters out of all the high school kids she played against.
What part couldn't she stand?
She couldn't stand how I asked her to practice.
Oh.
I said, Kara, this is how we will practice putting. You take one ball out of your bag and you bring it onto the green. Now, every putt from within 10 feet, you get one shot at making it. Now, you have to attempt to hit that putt the same way you would every time you would do it on the golf course, which meant line it up, think about it, try to make the putt. If you miss it, pick the ball up, move it to another location, and try it again. If you made it, pick the ball out of the cup, put it somewhere else. Instead of standing there with six golf balls on the exact same line and making one out of six, you can't do that on the golf course, can you, Fred? So what I said was,
not when somebody's watching.
Well, you have to practice the game like you play it.
Yeah.
So set your mind, get your mind thinking about, how do I make putts, not how do I miss putts? And I watch this time and time again. I watch people practice missing putts on the practice green. They all stand there and practice missing putts. If you watch them, they miss most of their putts. And then to improve her long putting game, I go, listen, There's 9 hole locations on this practice green. You start here, I don't care which direction you go, but you have 2 putts to get it in every cup. If you don't, you come back here and you start over again. And until you can play 18 holes on the putting green with 2 or less putts, you're not going home tonight.
Huh. Awesome.
So you stand there and you think, oh, this is a 15-footer. I've got to get it within 3 feet. How do I hit it? Where do I need to? Let me look at this. Let me make the putt. Not standing there trying to make the perfect pendulum swing or the perfect back open, closed, open, release, back. There's 18 different thousand kinds of ways to putt. You own one of them. Use your natural stroke and learn how to make putts. Train your brain that the only thing you're interested in is how do I put the ball in the hole? What is my line? What is my speed? And if I should miss it, where is the most likely place for me to be able to put the ball and make the 2-putt? Mm. Otherwise, I got to go back to the first cup over here, and I'm 17 holes into this thing, and Dad's standing there watching, and I'm going to have to do this whole thing over again if I blow it on the 18th hole. So that's what I'm saying. We do the same thing at the driving range. We stand there and we play machine gun practice. How fast can you hit all the buckets, all the balls in your bucket? That's what I see people doing. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is how my students learn to play. Practice. They come out to the range with a bucket. I give them one ball and I say, okay, walk over there 6 feet, put the ball down on the grass, tell me where you're going to aim it, and hit the shot. Now, you may hit the shot, you may not hit the shot, but if you don't hit the shot, you're going to come back to me and you're going to say, I'm going to ask you what happened. And we're going to talk about it, and then I'm going to give them another golf ball. I'm going to tell them, walk back over there, 5 feet away from me, and do it again. Okay. I've seen one person this summer on the driving range put their bucket of balls away from where they were hitting, hit a shot, look at it, walk back over, grab one more ball, walk back over to where they're hitting it, set up and hit it again.
Oh, yeah. We get a bucket. We dump it out. Whack, boom. Yeah. Whack, boom.
And all of a sudden, right. All 50 of these golf balls are gone.
Rake and whack.
And yeah, exactly. Rake and we haven't accomplished anything. We haven't accomplished anything. Why? Because we're practicing hitting golf balls on the driving range. We're not practicing like we play.
Mm-hmm.
I will often go to the driving range and go, okay, I'm going to play Oak Meadows Golf Course right now. So on the first tee, I usually hit a driver, and I try to shape this ball off the right-hand side of the fairway because I have a back left pin, and that's where I want my second shot. So I'll pretend that I'm at Oak Meadows, and I'll put my tee ball down, grab my playing club, and make the shot and decide, did it land there or did it land somewhere where I've got to use a different type of second shot? No, it landed there. So what do I typically hit? I usually hit an 8-iron in that situation. So now I go over and I grab another ball and I grab my 8-iron and I go back over to where I'm going to play that from. I pick a target, simulating where I would be on the regular golf course, and I hit that shot. I'm not concerned with, am I making the perfect swing all the time? We have natural swing tendencies. It's very difficult to change those. But what I'm trying to focus people in on is learn to play the game of golf, not make the perfect swing. So those are two areas of playing while you're practicing that helps you make a better game, not a better swing. And that's the direction we need to take our games. We need to go play the game of golf.
Yesterday, there was a single that came up behind us and probably joined us around number 12 or 13 or something. And as we got to, he was very entertaining. He wasn't a great golfer. He was having fun. He knew the course well. But I noticed at one point he had about a 14-foot putt. And as he was standing over the putt, he was verbalizing. He was actually saying out loud, 2-putt, 2-putt, 2-putt. I'm like, what? And he goes, I just want to get this in 2. I'm like, why don't you want to get it in 1? Why are you saying 2-putt? You can make that putt. And he goes, no, I can never make this putt. I just want to get it close enough so I can tap it in. I'm like, are you kidding me? Really? Just 1 putt? It's like, I just couldn't believe that that's what he was telling himself.
Let me ask you a question.
He also came up 3 feet short on the putt.
Sure.
And
let
I
me
know
ask you
for
a question.
Me, for me, what I do, and I'll just throw this in, is I try to, for my ball marker, whenever I go on vacation to a different country, I like to get a coin that has a one on it. You know, the
Good.
Smallest denomination
sure.
of coin. So I can't, so I use a ball marker, a coin that just says one, to remind me when I put the ball marker down there to line up my putt, to remind myself, one putt, one putt, one putt. Not that good at it, but I remind myself.
How many birdie putts have you turned into bogeys? Let me ask you a question. Have you turned more birdie putts into bogeys than making birdies?
Oh yeah, I do not make a lot of birdies.
Okay, but we have birdie opportunities now.
Yes.
Granted, all of our birdie opportunities aren't 4-footers. Most of
yes.
our birdie opportunities are 15-foot putts.
Yes.
Okay, and all we're trying to think about is making birdie, all right? We want to make birdie. So we end up hitting the ball too hard, and it's on the wrong line. And instead of having that tap-in 2-footer, we've now got a knee-knocker 6-footer back up the hill that we don't seem to be able to make. The tour players are playing the game the same way. What they're trying to do is evaluate if they should miss it. Where is it going to end up? Now, there's a lot of theories. Nicholas always said he wanted his ball to roll in the cup on the last half of a turn of a golf ball. Okay? Many modern-day teachers will say the optimum speed a putt should roll is one that would land within 18 inches if it should miss the cup. Okay. Either way is okay. All right? But if you don't accomplish that, where is your ball going to end up? If you hit them too far, too hard, or too soft and they don't get there, then you're facing a par putt that you don't have any confidence in. So, you know, you have to understand that yes, we understand we're trying to score as low as we can, but we can't turn a birdie putt into a bogey because we think the right thing to do is to drill it on this line and hope that it holds the line. But if it should miss, it rolls 2 feet past the cup, but just past that 2-foot roll is a little slope that runs down 20 feet. And all of a sudden you're looking at it going, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, I missed it by that much. I was playing one day with a kid and he did exactly this. He hit a long putt. And it rolls by, and it just misses the edge of the cup. And he walks by me, and he goes, how far did I miss that by? And I said, about 15 feet. And he looks at me and goes, you're right.
Yeah, and what he was thinking when he asked the question was, how close to the hole was it when it went by the hole?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but in actuality, it just kept going.
Okay, he was 15 feet on the other side of the cup. He missed it by 15 feet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't get all high and mighty on me that you think that you should have deserved that putt that went burning by that edge and missed it by half a ball when you now have a 15-foot uphill side hill putt to try to make your par.
Right, right. No, I was happy yesterday. I only had 1 3-putt yesterday.
That's good.
Yeah, I ended up with 30 putts on the day. That's a good day for me. But that also
so 30 putts on the day. That means
I didn't hit a lot of greens. Is what I mean
exactly,
by shooting an 86. Exactly. Right.
So looking back on your game improvement scorecard, what was your average longest? What was your average first putt distance?
Well, like I said, it ranged. Because of the wind, there was a lot of balls that got knocked down. So I didn't keep track of that the rest of the day.
Let's just think for the sake of this conversation. What do you think your average first putt distance was?
15 steps.
Okay.
So that's about 45 feet.
Okay. So that tells me that your short game, if you're missing greens, okay, that you're not – that your short game isn't capable of getting the ball, which is technically your third shot on a par four.
Right.
Okay. So your third shot, you're not capable of getting that anywhere close to the hole.
I need to learn how to consistently turn three shots into two. Is this how we started this conversation, yeah, with the fact that my short game's in dire need?
There's two ways to do that, Brad. Okay. The next time you go to practice your short game, take your 9-iron, your pitch, take all of your 9-irons through your wedges, okay? And start from the same location on the practice chipping green, all right? And let's say that you have a cup that is 15 steps away from the edge of the green where you're working from, okay? So you're off the green. You got 15 steps to that flag location. I want you to put a ball down. I want you to first one with a 9-iron. Second shot, you put a ball down, you hit it with a pitching wedge. Third shot, you put down, you hit with a sand wedge. And the fourth shot, you put down, you hit with your lob wedge. And I want you to do that over and over and over until you begin to understand how consistently one club versus the next gets the ball to the hole. Now, those are four different types of shots. Okay, you cannot hit your 9-iron as far as you're going to have to hit your lob wedge in order to get that ball close to the hole. So you'll begin to see where your landing spots have to be in order to get the ball closest to the hole. So what I do with my game is I understand that my lob wedge is going to go X percentage to the hole in the air, and the remainder is going to roll out, okay? And my sand wedge is going to land a little further away from the hole, and it's going to roll out a little further. And it keeps working back towards you. So I go out there and I develop a relationship. I understand that my 9-iron, okay, might be a 4-to-1, meaning it's going to roll out four times as far as I hit it in the air. So I've got a 15-step distance. I know it's 15 steps. I just walked it off. So I come back and I go, you know what? I'm gonna hit a little pitch shot with this 9-iron about 4 feet, and I'm going to watch it roll out 12. Okay, I don't have that luxury because I have a sand trap in front of me. So now I'm looking at it. I've still got a 15-step distance between me, but I recognize that I have 7 paces to land it on and allow the ball to roll to the hole. Well, maybe that shot is my pitching wedge, my sand wedge. I know that I can hit it 9 paces in the air and let it roll out 7 paces of roll. I'm not looking at trying to hit my lob wedge and spin it so that it checks and rests next to the hole, because I have to swing much harder, much faster. I have to throw it way up in the air. And if I don't commit to this shot, then chances are I'm not going to hit it hard enough and I'm going to end up in the sand trap. Or I really know I need to keep my club head speed up a lot with this, so I'm going to generate a lot of it. And you come through that ball, and all of a sudden, instead of catching that ball on the face of the club, you catch it on the leading edge of the club, and that ball takes off like a rocket ship and lands 30 yards on the other side of the green. So you develop a confidence level with the various clubs, but you have to discover what that is. That's what I'm saying. There are many ways for you to practice this game, but you have to devise methods to practice the game like you play it. Okay? So that's just another way of improving parts of your game, because the game of golf for 18 holes, first of all, most of the holes you end up playing, there's 4 par 3s. So the most you're ever going to hit your driver is 14 times. And many of those times you may not hit your driver, you were hitting your 3-wood yesterday. Mm-hmm. So spend 90% of your time on the driving range pounding your driver, and spend no time trying to figure out 9-iron, pitching wedge, sand wedge, lob wedge, 15-pace shot, which one works the best for me. Mm-hmm. So again, you got to practice your game like you play. Mm-hmm. And do that when you go out to play. Like I said, use a 7-iron instead of a 9-iron.
Yeah.
even though you're playing the game, even though I know you're going to want to hit that 9-iron, Fred, pick the 7-iron and visualize how that 7-iron could make the ball get close to the hole. It's going to be a different type of shot than your 9-iron. But that's what you need to encourage yourself to do. Become creative. Play the game.
I want to just let everybody know, especially those of you in the Midwest, in the Chicago area specifically, go to Rick's website, check him out, go work with Rick. It's going to have an impact on your game. His website, www.thegolfbettercoach.com. Where specifically in the Chicago area are you, Rick?
I work out of Oak Meadows Golf Course in Addison, but I have a very unique approach to the game and a very mobile system. So when you look at my website, check out my photo section, you'll see what I'm talking about. I've got a mobile teaching system that goes most any place.
Okay. And it's not just golf instruction, it's also club fitting?
It is, because they do go hand in hand, and we can discover that process together by allowing you the opportunity to hit different clubs with different loft and lie angles to see how that can impact your golf ball's flight plan.
You are such a good instructor on being able – I mean, there are a lot of guys who are great golfers who become instructors that cannot verbalize, that cannot communicate the message that they're trying to get across. To many golfers who the game comes easily to, they have trouble communicating. They go into teaching because they love to play golf and they think they can help. But being able to communicate is so much more difficult. And I've had so many people on this show who have difficulty communicating, and I think that you are very, very good.
Well, thank you, Fred. I was educated as a physical education instructor from Springfield College in Springfield, Massachusetts.
There you go.
And this was the belief system that I either understood or was ingrained in me during college. I always believe that if the teacher is the one who possesses the knowledge and the student is the one who's looking to learn it, then it's the responsibility of the teacher to figure out how to present the material so that the student can comprehend what they're trying to learn. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't come easily because everybody has a different way of thinking. It's just like that guy that I said, look, you're going to hit this. I didn't tell him he was going to hit the ball down the left-hand side of the fairway. He told me what side of the golf ball he needed to hit. Right. So for him, that was a great way for him to just change his thinking in order to make – that doesn't work with everybody. But during my conversation with him, I'm looking for a key that tells me, this is where I need to go with this. Because I need to show you, get you to think differently. It's my responsibility as the teacher to make sure that you learn.
Wow. Awesome, buddy. Awesome. Well, I'm sorry. I don't think we really can. What's so funny is the whole point we brought you on is what is your ball's flight plan? And we've never really covered it in the detail that I wanted it to do. And at some point we will have to.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
And we can talk about Golf in the Kingdom at some point, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody should read it at least once a month. or listen to it. Absolutely.
Or listen to it on Audible.com. Very good.
Right.
All right. Well, again, the website is www.thegolfbettercoach.com. Rick Kosher, thanks so much for these two incredible lessons over the last two episodes of Golf Smarter Podcast. It's really been a lot of fun speaking with you.
It's been my pleasure, Fred. Thank you very much.
Hey, this is the last call for our contest drawing for the complete training kit, the Advanced Mo Norman training kit, valued at nearly $400. The kit includes Todd Graves' ebook, a video of your choice from their library of DVDs at monormangolf.com, the alignment tool, a strike bag, and the Feeling of Greatness training club. Deadline for entry is this Friday, September 3rd, unless, of course, you're listening to this show on the weekend and it's Labor Day weekend and you just missed your chance. Give it another shot just in case. If it's Saturday or Sunday, maybe Monday, give it a shot. I may not have gotten to it yet. Go to golfsmarter.com and click on Enter Contest. And, of course, Golf Smarter members are automatically entered to win. But if you really want this thing, this kit, you can increase your chances by entering again because only Golf Smarter members are allowed to have their name in the drawing twice. Again, that's the contest page at golfsmarter.com. And I remind you, once you're there, click on the banner ad at the top of the page for our participating contest sponsor. Now, I do invite you to send a golf haiku or six words that describe your passion for our favorite game. This week, we close with a golf haiku by Golf Smarter member Richard Todd of Amherst, Ohio. Trees, grass, air, earth, sun, hitting a little white ball, enjoying the game. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, I invite you to click the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.